Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. In a few moments, we'll talk with Neil Coulong about football and other issues. Matt Leon, final half hour. Penn State basketball tonight with Ohio State in the Jordan Center. That will tip off at 8 o'clock. We're on beginning at 7:30. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day, courtesy of NBC Sports. Dan Hicks and Bodie Miller. Michaela Schifrin wins gold in the giant slalom.
A big favorite tomorrow in the slalom, but boy, would this set the table for these games.
I think she did a great job in the first run setting herself up. We just needed Michaela to go out there and absolutely attack this second run.
Two tenths up.
We know it's going to be fairly tight for the first half of this course. Again, it's going to be, can she ski the pitch aggressively, get rid of that stivet, clean up the top of the turn, and then charge the bottom.
And Schifrin is added to the time. About a half second lead on Mowinkle. So if she keeps it together here, she should have the lead with one skier left.
And that was much better than the previous skiers through that tough gate where the snow is really breaking away, deterioration. Michaela's putting out some amazing skiing right now.
Schifrin, who 4 years ago said, I'm sure as heck don't want to get fifth at the next Olympics, is going to take over the top spot, getting through the final few gates. Coming down the hill, hanging on, and to the line by 0.4.
Michaela Schifrin winning gold last night in South Korea. In fact, early this morning, I think it happened about 12:45 in the morning Eastern time. Courtesy of NBC Sports, your home for the Olympics. Dan Hicks and Bodie Miller with the call. All right, let's shift gears. Now we're going to talk some football here for a moment, and we're going to do it with Neil Coulong from USA Today. Neil, welcome. And, you know, we talk often about many things, but the ability to cover stuff these days. And you know, I teach a class at Penn State, and there's so many stories out there that are incorrect stories and so forth. First of all, it's great to have you with us on the show, and maybe it's a topic we can start with.
So it's great to be here, and that's such an interesting segue. I was literally just talking to somebody about the exact, well, more or less the exact topic that you were referring to. And the biggest difference, if I can add to that, would be in the past, it was your anonymous source reported news, whereas today, the report becomes an opinion from an anonymous source. And kind of figuring out how to delineate between one versus the other takes a little bit of skill, because a lot of writers will write it the same way. And perhaps not ironically, it's because they're writing it with 280 characters.
Right.
So it's not even like they're even bothering to flesh out exactly what they mean by the information that they got. I mean, the anonymous source to me isn't the issue. It's the person reporting it, not delineating clearly for the audience whether it's somebody's opinion coming from that anonymous source or it's something factual. And we just saw that the other day with a CBS reporter that reported apparently somebody else was going to be hired as the Chargers offensive coordinator. And an hour later, the Chargers announced it was somebody else. And that person comes back saying that the classic, well, that's what I was told. That was this person's, you know, thinking of, that was their feeling of the situation. It's like, well, yeah, but why didn't you say that then? You know, you said this is what was happening, and you took them at their word. And if you do it once, it's not the first time that you've done it, in my opinion.
Well, I agree with that, Neil. In fact, let's stay on this topic for a moment, because I've talked to my class about this many, many times. I said I'd rather have you be second and right than first and wrong. When you put together stories where it's important information, how hard do you work to get that second source?
It really depends on what it is. More often than not, what we're doing, and this I admit is not mainstream journalism. The bedrock of it is exactly what you said. We don't even want to be first. You know, I joke with them, and I'm not even really joking, but it's like, I'm not paying you enough to be first. Don't worry about breaking news. You know, the Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport collectively make probably as much as a highly skilled veteran NFL quarterback. They are the ones that are going to break news to a point where I'd even argue the NFL largely has wanted to control it to be that. You know, they want to be able to funnel their news into their broadcast partners and into their own network. They're not really interested in the local beat guys breaking their own thing. So teams kind of they have more of a sense of sending the real stuff into a smaller group of reporters. So in my mind, it's more like go get a second source if you saw somebody else saying it and you've heard the same thing. But if you see that Schefter has that news, if Rappaport has that news, the proper thing then is to say they broke it. You can credit them with that. Give them the source title. You know, they're the ones that are reporting this, and you can spin off of that. What we aim for is the first best analysis of the news itself. Breaking the news is one thing. Explaining to a highly intelligent, highly aware audience today, which I don't feel was the case 30 years ago, in considering the amount of information that there is, the amount of kind of legislative changes that have happened within the NFL, it's more important to explain to the audience today why this matters, why this is a big deal. It goes beyond just the length in dollars of the contract, the amount of games in the suspension, whatever it is. There's a lot more information to go into nowadays other than just the Twitter report that this guy was hired or this guy was suspended.
You and I both know, though, that a major avenue of sources among the people you just cited happen to be the agents. I mean, you and I
probably
both know that they're the ones, that a good chunk of the time it's the agent feeding them the story, and they know that's the best way, quote, for them to get their side or information out.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll even use, and I would even argue to the point, what people don't really know is somebody like Adam Schefter, he's giving out as much information as he's getting. It's not like he's got people lined up begging to talk to him and give him whatever information they have. Agents, team sources typically are agents, by the way, just lay that out there now. They call it a team source, which isn't exactly legitimate. But whatever it is, it more often than not, it's going to be an agent. And more often than not, the reason the agent is telling Schefter is because Schefter is giving him something in exchange, probably for another client. More often, you're hearing more and more right now about agents in the NFL. They're now being required to recertify every 2 years. Oddly enough, I just found this out recently. They haven't been required to do that. The only mandate that they had to keep their good standing with the NFLPA was to assign a contract, I think, in the last 3 years. Right. They weren't required to go over the new CBA information or anything like that. So the point is, these guys have been around for a while. It takes a lot to get them kind of out of circulation. And the bigger firms employ more of the agents. And with that, they're finding out more information from the teams through Adam Schefter than they are through their own sources. So they're saying, hey, I've got information on this. What can you tell me about that? They'll trade it off. And then Schefter goes on Twitter, goes on TV to talk about it. The agent can then go back to his firm, his boss, or his client and say, this is what I'm hearing from Schefter. Right. This guy's going to get this. That helps us in this way. I mean, it's all just one big economy of information. And to me, I'm a nerd. I'm a dork. I really find that stuff fascinating. And I think it's a really interesting subset of the NFL that people don't really believe exists.
And then there's another part that fans should always take with a grain of salt is when you hear a coach or an athlete in the NFL as a league, for example, say, well, I haven't talked to them. Well, you're absolutely right. You didn't talk to them. Your agent did.
Yep.
I mean, that's not the right. The right question is not, have you talked with the Bills? Okay? The question is, have you or any representative representing you talked with the Bills?
Has your representation talked to the Bills?
Right.
Take the guy out of it completely.
Right, completely.
You know that you're not the guy that's going to talk
to
him.
Because he's not going to talk to him. He's not going to talk to him.
Why would he? Right. You know, Mike Tomlin, for example, I'm sure he's due an extension at some point. If they're discussing it, Tomlin's on a yacht in the South Pacific, hopefully somewhere, having a good time, fishing, drinking some beer, whatever it is that he's doing. His agent's the guy that's working on the contract. Right. Tomlin's just going to get a phone call that says, here it is. This is your best offer. Great. Thanks. Take it. Somebody eventually is going to reach out to him for comment, and he's going to give the spiel that he would. But, yeah, I mean, he's not directly involved with the negotiation. That's literally why you pay the agent to begin with. You know, Tomlin has other things to worry about.
Well, Tomlin also took care of something that's within his secondary. They brought Tom Bradley in. You know, they'll bring in anybody. Hey, can you take a look at the stuff we have? Talk to us, give a little give and take. And I guess when he did it, they were just blown away by how much he knew. So talk about the addition of Tom Bradley and what do you think that hiring means in the second? Even though Tom's never coached in the pros before, what do you think that hiring means?
You know, I think what we have right now with the Steelers is, in my opinion, recognition of what exactly has kind of plagued them recently. And I'll go back just to even the recent past. Scotty Montgomery, you might remember, was the Steelers' wide receivers coach at the height of the Young Money days, and you had Mike Wallace, Emmanuel Sanders, Antonio Brown. There was very much a youth movement past Hines Ward at the position. I think Hines Ward, to some degree, served as that bedrock veteran leader. And with Ward out of the picture, now you've got the younger players that might not have yet developed the same kind of leadership ability. Scotty Montgomery, one reason or another, I've heard it both ways. He wanted to go back to Duke. Tomlin strongly encouraged him to go find a different job. Whatever it was, he left, and they went in and brought Richard Mann, an Aliquippa native, essentially out of retirement, somebody with 35 years of experience coaching the position, largely to establish that level of leadership. And I think what you're seeing with Bradley, you could make the same argument that the defensive backs are going to need that here sooner rather than later.
Right.
One thing I heard about Carnell Lake, who reportedly, I mean, I shouldn't even say reportedly, his own words, he wants to go back and be closer to his family in California. He wants to be around his son for his senior year of high school. Whatever reason, Carnell Lake is no longer there. For the Steelers to find somebody that's as disciplined and as fundamentally strong as Bradley has been and has shown throughout his entire career that he is that way, to me, it makes no difference at all whether he's coaching in the pros or college, because the reality is, to whatever degree, the secondary they have right now is probably not a whole lot different than the top-end colleges have anyway. He's used to that. He's used to this kind of challenge. This is a group that is in desperate need of fundamental help. And everything that I've heard about Carnell Lake on the field, the coaching that he did was very much direct in a group, a small group, discussing, whereas Bradley's style is much more, let's get on the field and let's work it out. And I think the Steelers saw a great opportunity with a coach as experienced as Bradley to address what is, in my opinion, their fundamental biggest problem. They can't continue to throw free agents and draft picks at their secondary. They need people that can go in and execute. And in my opinion, it was time for a leadership change. I wish Carnell Lake the best. He's one of the best Steelers that we'll ever see play. I think he did a good job in the opportunity that he has as a coach, but it was time to move on. I think Bradley's a phenomenal addition to that coaching staff.
And especially when you consider some of the youth, Artie Burns, Sean Davis, two examples, both not that far removed from college, and bringing in somebody who has already gone out there and has been relating to 18 to 22 year olds, now is relating to 23 and 24 year olds. It's not much of a difference except for obviously the money part.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. But one, everything you heard about both Sean Davis and Artie Burns, they were humbled beyond their years. They were much more mature coming into the NFL. Along with that, you've got Cam Sutton, a player that didn't get a whole lot of time last year, but they expect big things from him. They're probably going to walk on from Will Gay this offseason. They're going to be a very young secondary next year, and that's before the draft. And it's almost a certainty they're probably going to add another safety in the draft as well, maybe saying goodbye to Rob Golden. So really, you're looking at a coach that's in the perfect position. Fine, they were paid a couple million dollars, but Artie Burns and Sean Davis can't look in a mirror right now and say that their careers are on the up and up right now. You really can't say that. They're going to need a different voice. They're going to need somebody else to help bring out more from them and help them mature as players. My experience with them, they're nice, humble young guys. I think they're going to get better. But that progress has to go a little bit quicker for what the team is in terms of salary, where they are in terms of personnel. They have to go a different direction. I think Burns and Davis and even down to Mike Mitchell, Cam Sutton, everyone else, I think they're going to get a lot better with a more fundamental, disciplined approach that's going to help them bring out more in the defense. The defense is just too shallow, and we've seen that in the playoffs the last 3 years.
Yeah, and that's the big issue is obviously they're going to have to find some linebacker, and it's not easy to do. But Ryan Shazier, you and I both know, sometimes guys make up for sins other places because of their ability. He did that for them. He made up for sins in a couple of other areas besides just taking care of his own.
Yeah, I think if anything, you look at the way the defense performed after Shazier's injury. And it was as hot as it can get, and it's as cold as it can get. I think that in and of itself shows two things. One, the real value of Ryan Shazier. He did a lot more than I think people thought that he did. And two, what they had to do just to stay average. I mean, it really was remarkable. You saw Jacksonville, the Jaguars completely torched that defense up and down on their own field. And it wasn't like, you know, it took them a while to kind of progress and they just ran them out at the end, which was sort of like the regular season game was. They were kicking the tar out of them from the start. I mean, that really wasn't a challenge at all for that offense. They mowed right through them. And a large part of that was because the Steelers just, they lost really their only playmaker, their most athletic player, and arguably one of the only athletic players on that defense. I think what we really saw was a team that had gone young over the last couple of years with the hope of boosting their athleticism. They really only had Shazier. With Shazier out there, they're slow all of a sudden. Like, didn't we deal with this back in 2011?
Yeah.
This was the same storyline, and we saw the same problems with them. Really just no speed, no awareness. And I think Shazier, he was really doing far more than people would have recognized that he was doing, and he was still a Pro Bowl level player. So that absence, they're not going to fix that. That's not going to get taken care of in a year. He really was a remarkable player, and you really hope that he can get on his feet. And, you know, that in and of itself, I think it'd be a miracle if he plays again. But just a special player cut down way too short. That's really going to hurt for them.
Well, I thought this was a fascinating philosophical talk, seriously, about the industry, how it works, and so forth. Neil, thanks so much for that insight. I think the audience got a lot out of listening to some of that.
I didn't know that you taught. That's really cool. You should do you webcast your show, or do I have to pay tuition or whatever? I want to see that.
I do teach. I've ruined a lot of careers. So where they walked out of here thought they were like, he taught me to do this. They're like, well, that's all wrong. So I've done that now for, 14 years maybe, 15 years I've taught. And I've been, you know, some of the people that have come out of here that have succeeded in spite of it. So it's
well, good for you. It's a noble pursuit.
It's good. It's good being around. You know, it's really great being around young people. You know, and to do this show, there are many, many times where in talking with my class, it has helped me stay in touch with the thoughts and the opinions of young people, which has helped me in this show here and being. An old curmudgeon all the time.
I can definitely relate to that. We launched an esports website recently. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that at all.
I am familiar with esports. Yes,
believe. It's insane. It is completely unlike anything I've ever been around.
To your point,
I know exactly what you mean, because it's just like, wow, this is a completely different language. I've never felt so old in my life. I'm not even really all that old,
right? Because short term, Neil. That's a short-term venture. People get involved, and they can make some quick cash out of it because it's hot.
They already are. There are franchises for esports. I'm sorry, I'm running way over new break here, but there are franchises within esports, certain games right now that are selling for like $25 million.
Oh.
And if I'm not mistaken, I believe the Las Vegas Knights, their franchise fee a couple years ago was $30
million. Yeah.
So they're almost at the level of an NHL team already. I mean, that's nuts. That's absolutely insane. The money that's going into that is other world. It really is crazy.
And they have people who announce esports now. They have people who announce it.
You listen to it, I did confirm they actually are speaking English. It took me a while to kind of grasp the dialect. But yeah, a lot of the stuff that they're talking about makes a little more sense now, but that's a really strange world.
I mean, they'll use phrases, and you'll sit there and go, okay, wait a minute. Oh, okay. I see what you're saying now.
You mentioned Meta once. Let me look this up quick. Okay, I got that word. That's how I learned how to speak Spanish.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, Neil, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulon, USA Today. I think it's always a fascinating topic. We talked football there, but I mean, how things are covered these days. There's so much one source, not a lot of multi-sourcing. It is something where... when you're attempting to teach a course in broadcasting or you're attempting to teach a course in journalism, there is a temptation to earn your name or to get your name out there. There's a big difference between earning your name and getting your name out there. There's a temptation to get your name out there by breaking stories. You earn your name by breaking accurate stories. You get a name by breaking stories. You earn a name by actually being accurate with what you break. In other words, the second somebody hears you talking about something, you have credibility. And because you have credibility,
you have an audience locked in when you speak. And that is something that is missing in some elements of journalism these days, some elements missing in sports journalism these days. And I've always told my class, as I told Neil, look, I'd rather have you be second and right than first and wrong. And how many times have we heard first and wrong in recent years on a wide variety of topics? All right, bottom of the hour coming up. Matt Leon will join us from Philadelphia. We'll talk about a wide variety of subjects with him as well. As we continue, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The competition is on! And this month, Sunbury Motors is going for the gold! February is the month to get Olympic-size savings at SMC. Sunbury Motors Ford is having their annual President's Day sales event. Plus, it's Truck Month. SMC is where you want to be to choose from four city blocks of new Fords. SMC has discounts up to 16 grand.
And some vehicles are at half price.
SMC is where you want to be to save up to $16,000 on new Ford trucks. And they start as low as $25,919. Choose from over 50 of the top-selling Ford Escape, and they're slashed to $19,980. SMC has the best hidden secret in the car business. Take over $15,000 off a C-Max Energy.
That's more than half off.
Lease it for only $179 a month for 36 months with zero down. That's right, nothing down. And it includes tax tags, plus the first payment is taken care of.
Hurry, there's only eight left.
SMC is where you want to be for Olympic-sized savings during Truck Month and the President's Day sales event. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Final half hour of the show. Great to have you with us. So thanks to Dave Repson, who joined us in the 3:30 half hour, and Neil Kulong, who joined us in the 4 o'clock half hour. Tomorrow, Dick Weiss will be on the show. Hoops Weiss is going to join us, one of the all-time greats. First time we've had him on the show, in fact. He's going to be at the game tonight. In fact, he rode up with Dick Girardi. The old, Hoops for years worked out of Philadelphia and then went to the Daily News in New York. And he's just one of the all-time greats. We will talk with him on the show tomorrow and get his recap on tonight's showdown with Ohio State. Nathan Davis is going to join us tomorrow at 3:35, picks in the final half hour. So Nathan Davis, 3:35 tomorrow. Hoops Weiss at 4:06. And last but not least, picks in the final half hour of tomorrow's show. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Michaela Schifrin taking gold in the early morning hours, Eastern Time, in South Korea, as she was able to win the giant slalom, which she was not favored in. That this is a steal for her, but she skied brilliantly and won the gold medal. She may win two other golds. We'll find out as time goes. It's a compressed schedule for her. Makes it a little more difficult, but it's also difficult on the other competitors, too. But she's trying to win three here. That's why there's some that are just specialists. And we'll find out how it plays out. But congratulations to her. Happening about, 12:45 this morning, Eastern Time. But you remember, there's, 47% of the population lives in the Eastern Time Zone. The other 53% obviously lives in the Central Mountain or Pacific Time Zones. And so in the Pacific Time Zone, it would have been 9:45 as they watched it live last night. And Denver, it would have been 10:45. So 12:45 in the East, it's something you'll probably see on a replay tonight. But Michaela Schifrin did win the gold medal for the United States in the giant slalom last night. Tonight, Penn State basketball, the Nittany Lions will take on Ohio State in the Jordan Center at 8. It's a big game for both teams. Big game for Ohio State because they have the conference lead and they want to maintain the conference lead. They're fighting to win a conference championship. They're fighting to be the number one seed in the Big Ten tournament. They're fighting to be as high a seed as possible in the NCAA tournament. And for Penn State, it's a big game for obvious reasons. They've got one of the top 10 teams in the country in their building. Penn State is hot. Nittany Lions have won 3 in a row. They've won 5 of their last 6, including a win at Ohio State. And one of the great elements about tonight's game is that over the long time that I've done this, there have been moments where a nationally ranked team has come into the Jordan Center, and you looked at it and felt that there had to be a laundry list of items that absolutely had to go right for Penn State to win. Part of it is Penn State would have to do X, Y, and Z, and the opponent would have to struggle doing X, Y, and Z because the margin of error was so thin. That's not the case with this game. That's what makes it so intriguing. What makes this game so intriguing is that I feel Ohio State could play really well, and at the same time, Penn State could play really well. And I think one would win 5 and the other one would win 5. That's how close I think the two teams are. And that's a credit to Chris Holtmann of Ohio State, who's done a great job. Many thought they'd finish in the middle of the pack in the Big Ten this year. Instead, getting Kaeda Bates-Diop back has been huge. He is on the verge of probably being the Big Ten Player of the Year. And you watch him play in the Jordan Center tonight, you'll see why. He is a special talent, good inside-out basketball talent with length. And Chris Holtmann, that's the kind of guy he is. He comes in from Butler. They put together a great season. They're 22-5. They've only lost the one game of the Big Ten. That was to Penn State. And every time he talks about his team and is asked about, you know, what's brought them here, he always takes the time to credit Thad Matta for putting the team together. Now, that takes somebody really secure within themselves to give their predecessor a lot of credit along the way. That's class. That's one of the reasons why a lot of people like Chris Holtmann a lot. Then there's Penn State's Patrick Chambers. He has done a great job of putting this thing together, something I talked about last week before the Illinois game. In a recruiting class, he was able to get the big man he needed with mobility in Mike Watkins, and he was able to get an X-factor guy in Josh Reeves. He then followed that recruiting class up by getting the point guard in Tony Carr, the power forward in Lamar Stevens, and another X-factor guy in Nazir Bostic, because they already had Shep Garner, the shooting guard in the program. So what he did was he recruited a team. He recruited a lineup. And now the parts have been able to fit together in conjunction with a spark plug off the defense in Jamari Wheeler, in conjunction with a fifth-year player like Julian Moore that can spell Mike Watkins and can hold the fort on the floor. All right, let's talk a little bit about Philly sports. Let's bring in Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. Matt, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
I actually did not. I had to travel with Penn on Thursday as we headed up to Dartmouth for the big weekend in New England, so I missed it.
All right. Actually, before I get to that, I want to ask you about Penn, because as you know, I have tremendous respect for Steve Donahue. Tremendous respect for him as a coach. What kind of job has he done in the short period of time he's been there?
He's done a heck of a job. You could see pieces of it last year when they surged in the second half of the Ivy season to sneak into the Ivy League tournament, and then did everything but beat Princeton in the quarterfinals, the semifinals of the tournament. And this year, they really, you know, they've been a very consistent group almost since day one. They started out 0-2. One of the losses was double overtime, could have gone either way. But now 17-7, lost at Harvard Saturday for their first Ivy League loss. But he has them playing great defense. He has a roster that top to bottom is bought in. Because one, if you watch the Quakers and you follow them, I think one of the most impressive things this year is at different points in the season, he's kind of called a number of different kids off the bench. And maybe they haven't played a couple games or they've played a limited role. And almost to a man, they always come up big whenever they get their opportunity. And I think it's obviously a credit to the kid and staying ready, but it's also a credit to the coach and the coaching staff keeping them engaged and keeping them buying in so that they are ready when the bell rings for them.
He told everyone at Boston College, I know this, that, look, he needed 5 years to do what they needed there. They gave him 4. And you could tell he was on track to doing something there, but they got impatient about it. But that turns out to be Penn's game, because I also think he's a really good game coach.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, even the game they lost on Saturday was fifth game in 8 days. It was on the road. And usually when they play these Ivy League back-to-backs, you go 7-7, you know, 7 o'clock Friday night, 7 o'clock Saturday night. Well, they played at 7 o'clock in Hanover, New Hampshire on Friday night. But then the game on Saturday was at 4. And it's only 3 hours, but when you're talking turnaround like that and you're at the back end of 5 and 8 days, you're asking a lot. And Harvard's very good. I think Penn and Harvard are clearly the two best teams in the Ivy League. And I think it's a pretty steep drop-off from 2 to 3. But Harvard came to play.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, Tommy Amaker always has his team. I mean, he's done a great job up there as well. I mean, Harvard for years have been and also ran in the in the Ivy League, and now he's turned them into somebody that, you know, you're really not in the mood to schedule them, for goodness sakes, in your non-conference because they're pretty good.
Yeah, he can get some talent in there. Well, I'll tell you, they've got some bigs, and, you know, he's got a big, specifically one kid, Chris Lewis, who killed Penn. He's the son of Mo Lewis, the former NFL linebacker, and just a really, really good front court player. Big guy, powerful, but soft around the basket, can do a lot of things. They're impressive. It's going to be fun to see how the rest of this season plays out. But they will obviously play again at the Palestra in a couple weeks, and I would be surprised if at some point they don't match up in the Ivy tournament as well.
Villanova's had to go without a couple of guys. Booth and Pascal have both been out for a period of time. But it seems like some of their freshmen, some of the younger players have stepped up. What have you seen from Villanova? Because, you know, when they got Booth and Pascal, this is one of the older teams in the country, and they know how to play together.
Yeah, no question about it. Again, a St. John's team that I don't know that anyone can figure out. They were 0-11 in the conference before they beat Villanova at the center. And, of course, they also had that win over Duke. So, you know, obviously a team that's got a lot of talent. But a nice bounce-back win for the Wildcats this weekend. They fall out of the number one spot. That doesn't really matter at this point. They're, you know, I think everybody's just kind of counting the days down to the NCAA tournament. You know, Villanova's going to be a one or worst case scenario with two seeds, and then it starts for real. But they play great defense for the most part. When they're healthy, they're balanced, and if they can get all pissed and firing when Smart trolls around, they'll be fine.
I was talking earlier about one of the areas where you can really tell it's a veteran team is how they handle transition defense, because older players, for the most part, it's not perfect, but older players, you know, because they've been through it before, they then understand the value of talking in transition defense. You watch Villanova in transition, they're really tough to beat off the bounce in transition because they always know where the other guy is supposed to be because they're telling the other guy where he's supposed to be.
Yeah, no, they are great. When I saw them in person up close doing the Penn-Villanova game, their defense is even more impressive. You mentioned the communication. And then just their ability in the half court and in transition to play physical without fouling, to make nothing easy. I think that's another one of the big reasons why they don't give you anything. They don't, you know, give up on plays ever. They are fucking it.
I think we lost there for a second. So what we'll do is we'll call him and reconnect and get him back on the line. And when we do that, we'll transition into the Philadelphia Eagles, because the Eagles have certainly had a lot of job movement this week, but that happens with successful teams. Successful teams always have coaches that other teams want to cherry pick and bring in to give them promotions. I mean, one's gone from quarterback coach to being an offensive coordinator, and one's gone from offensive coordinator to being a head coach, as Frank Reich has taken the Indianapolis Colts job. So, I mean, when that happens, when you're successful, that's what happens. People want to cherry pick your coaches. And Matt, as we bring you back in, I was talking about the Eagles staff. The bottom line is, you know, for Eagles fans, is that the play caller didn't leave. He's still very much there.
Yeah, it's Doug Peterson, and that's why I think, I mean, these losses will hurt. You know, Frank Reich is the offensive coordinator, John DeFilippo, the quarterback coach. You know, there was great chemistry on the offensive staff, and you saw that. I think the chemistry on the offensive coaching staff is a big reason why there was not the drop-off people anticipated, because they were able to figure out, get comfortable with Nick Foles, figure out what Nick did well in the offense, adjust the offense a little bit to suit Nick. So it will be interesting to see how they move forward. Now, it sounds like they're going to promote from within for the new quarterback's coach, Press Taylor, who was the assistant quarterback's coach. It sounds like he's going to get the gig. But offensive coordinator, I think a lot of people would love.
Is it Press? I think Press Taylor's the guy that's the one that was breaking down tape for them. I think Press Taylor was the guy that was breaking down tape for them, as a matter of fact, and he was the one that found the Bears play that opened the door for the Eagles' version of that play on fourth down when they were when they scored the touchdown against the Patriots in the winning moments of the first half. I think it was Press Taylor who really took on the role of being. I think a lot of people now know Ernie Adams as the guy that breaks down all the tape for Belichick with the New England Patriots. I think Press Taylor was the guy, was the one of the ones that was in charge of doing that for Philadelphia, and I think that makes a big difference because obviously he's very familiar with what they want to do and how they want to do it. And so I think he was the found the, that Bears play.
Well, I did a Press Taylor with the with the fourth and goal play.
Yeah.
I just caught the end of your question. Yeah, that's what they said, that he was the guy that brought it in. And I think quarterback's coach, because of the role and with the young quarterback, I honestly think it's probably makes more sense for continuity to promote from within there. I think you could make the argument because of the role that the offensive coordinator plays with the Eagles, that you're not a play caller, that if you wanted to bring in a fresh set of eyes, keep things fresh, that that might be the one you look at. But as I was saying, or I don't know if you caught it before I was breaking up there. Deuce Staley is a name I keep hearing for the offensive coordinator. They could promote him. And I think a lot of people would love to see that. Deuce has paid his dues, done a great job as the running backs coach. And a lot of people think he's ready to get a coordinator job. It's also been mentioned with the Giants OC job. So that'll be one to watch as well.
How stable are the Eagles when it comes to free agency? If I recall correctly, they don't really have a long list, do they?
No, I think it's 20 of 22 starters are locked in. You know, Foles is under contract. I think Trey Burton could be a free agent, and I think he's going to get a lot of interest as a tight end because he is not going to be the starter here as long as Zach Ertz is here. And he is a player with a load of talent, and his Super Bowl pass will do nothing to hurt his stature and his, you know, the level of what people know about him. So he's a guy that I think would probably move on. But, I mean, the core here, you're going to have some of the guys on the, I don't want to say on the fringe, but some of the veteran guys that came in on one-year deals, your Chris Long, Joe LeGarrette Blount, so the guys like that, it'll be interesting to see if they bring them back. But, you know, they're going to have some Nigel Bradham. There's talk of extending him at the linebacker position. But for the most part, I think you're going to – most of these guys are going to be back. They might have to make one or two tough decisions cap-wise. Torrey Smith, had a pretty good postseason, but underachieved during the regular season. I mean, great guy. It was a big reason, I think, that the chemistry and the clubhouse was so good with this team. But, you start looking at numbers and you start trying to make cold decisions based on production and what you're going to pay a guy. He's a guy that they maybe could set free, especially if they're confident Mac Hollins can step into that role. Some tough decisions, but I think most fans still aren't there yet. They're still basking in it all and waiting to break down the where everybody's going to go and who's going to be what for another day.
Well, it's great to win the Super Bowl and look around and go, you know, I feel pretty good about what we already have here.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that's where they are. That's a pretty good spot to be in.
Yeah, and, we, you know, most of the guys we talk about losing are names that are familiar here, but they're, you know, they're number two, number three wide receiver, backup tight end, number three defensive end. You know, guys have played key roles. I don't want to undersell that, but also, you know, that in theory are pretty replaceable. So it'll be interesting, but they've done a nice job because I think they actually won the Super Bowl ahead of schedule. I think if you tied the front office down, they didn't think this was the year. They thought, 18, 19, 20 would be their prime year. So they've already got one in the bank, so nice place to be.
Matt, always a pleasure. Appreciate it. Good luck on the road there with Penn.
Thank you very much.
Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. Great to have him on the show today. He's been a great contributor to the show as well. Our thanks to Neil Coulong, who joined us in the previous half hour, and also to Dave Revson from BTN, who joined us at 3:35 today. Coming up tomorrow, it'll be
Nathan Davis at 3:35, the Bucknell basketball coach, after their dramatic win against Colgate on Monday night, which was incredible. Kimball McKenzie hitting the game winner at the buzzer, as Doug Birdsong said, "You are my hero." And now they've got Holy Cross coming up on the road. We'll be talking to him. I think he might be on the road tomorrow when we're talking with him, but we appreciate Nathan Davis giving us the time tomorrow. And also Hoops Weiss, Dick Weiss, will be on the show tomorrow. Road up today with Dick Girardi to cover Penn State and Ohio State. And we'll find out what he thinks about the landscape of college basketball. Dick Weiss on the show tomorrow, one of the all-time greats in sports writing and one of the all-time greats in basketball sports writing. That's all coming up on tomorrow's show. Great to have you with us on the show today. Well, picks, by the way, tomorrow as well in the final half hour, as we do every week. I have no idea how things stand after the opening weekend of basketball picks, but Sean will inform us of all of that and much more coming up on tomorrow's show. The Nittany Lions will take on Ohio State tonight in the Jordan Center. That will be an 8 o'clock tip-off, 7:30 airtime. It is great to see a game in the Jordan Center this late in the season with stakes. And that's what everybody wants to see down the stretch, that you have been good enough to put yourself in a position where a late season game has stakes and to have it in your building. This really has not happened at Penn State probably since 2009. I know they made the tournament in 2011, but in 2009 they had Illinois in there and a game like this. And Illinois was really, really good in Penn State. We all know how Taylor Battle ended up winning that game at the end. So that's tonight, 8 o'clock. We're on at 7:30. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We'll talk to you from Permane Brothers in just a few minutes. And tonight from the Jordan Center at 7:30 on News Radio 1070 WKOK.